Those of you who were not here last Sunday may have a little angular unconformity here. That's a geologic term when things don't connect. Because last week we began a two-part series dealing with 2 Timothy 2 and verse 15. And there are those who will say, how can anybody preach on one verse for two Sundays? Well, this verse is kind of loaded. The passage says, do your best to present yourselves to God as one approved, a workman who does not need to be ashamed, who is correctly dividing or handling the word of truth. And one of the things we tried to point out last week is that much of the division, much of the confusion, much of the problem that people have with the teachings of the Bible and of Jesus is that they do not handle the word correctly, dividing properly the word of truth. Last week, we dealt with three examples. Number one was not separating the Old Testament from the New Testament. And by the way, this material, that lesson is available online. We also have copies of last week's bulletin that has an outline of this. But the reason we worship on Sunday is because we understand the biblical teaching that Jesus nailed the old law with all of its imperfections and all of its legalistic interpretations. We no longer are under that law. That's something that we have to divide the word of truth properly to understand. We talked about not separating history from encouragement. The classic example of that is the book of Revelation. The book of Revelation is not history. It was written to give encouragement. And it requires study to understand the condition of the people to whom it was written. And thirdly, we talked about not understanding that a parable is just that, a parable. It is not a fact. And a classic example of that is Luke, the 16th chapter, the story of the rich man and Lazarus. The word Lazarus would have been understood by the people of that day, and one that we can understand, that the meaning of it was that Lazarus is one without hope, one that was in need. It was not a proper name. And there are some names that even in our culture today, we understand nobody would name their kid because of the implications that are involved in that name. So those three things are things that were part of properly dividing the word of truth. Today we want to deal with three more examples of things that we need to properly divide the word of truth. And a lot of misunderstanding, a lot of problems that have come about in religion, a lot of people that have been disillusioned by what churches do is because they have not properly understood or divided the word of truth. And so number four, and this is a biggie, is not understanding that what happens is not always God's will. You know, we have those who say, well, everything that happens is God's will. That's an unfortunate statement. Because there are awful things that happen that are certainly not God's will. COVID is not God's will. I lost one of my closest friends 2 days ago, Jim Curry. Some of you might have known him. I've got so many stories about him. One of the greatest Christian men I've ever known. He died of COVID on Wednesday. His wife called me. We talked for a long time. What a loss. That's not God's will. And in the Old Testament, we have situations that people read and seem to somehow think God sanctioned it. For instance, the story of Jephthah, who who sacrificed his daughter. And I'll put that in quotes because I don't believe that the Bible is saying that he killed her. There were other ways of sacrificing your child, but he made an oath. It was not God's will. It was not God's command. He was not obeying some teaching of God. God does not ask us to do something that violates the things he says in other passages of Scripture. Thou shalt not murder is certainly one of God's primary teachings. So he didn't murder his daughter. Another example that would be important to understand is the story of the Levite in Judges, the 19th chapter, verse 29. I've got these in your bulletin. You want to read a horror story? Here's a guy that got into a political situation. And he had a concubine who was sexually abused and killed in the process of that. He cut her up, physically took a knife and cut her up into 12 pieces and sent these pieces to other parts of the Jewish community at that time to motivate them to do something about the abuse they were all experiencing. That was not something God told him to do. No. That was not God's will. Man's free moral choice frequently conflicts with God's will. 2 Peter 3 and verse 9, listen to this carefully. It is not God's will that anyone should perish, but that everyone should come to repentance. God does not want anyone to be lost. You know, we see this in the Far Side, in the comic section. We see it in serious theological works, that God takes joy in sending people to hell. No, 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 no. God does not want people to be lost. You say, well, then why didn't he just wipe out the whole thing? Because we need to have the freedom to obey God or to disobey God. Now, I want you to think about that. We have the choice whether to obey God or whether to disobey God. You say, well, why does that matter? Because love does not exist unless there is choice. And I don't mean to be offensive here, but let me give you the obvious example. If there is rape, is that love? And I don't think any rational human being would say it is. Rape is the deliberate, malicious exploitation of another human being. It has nothing to do with love. Unless there is choice, love is not possible, not any kind of love. So how can we love God? Because we have the choice not to love God. How do you love your wife or your husband or your child? Because you have the choice whether to do that or not. We have the freedom to disobey God. That is not God's will. But love is that important. You think of anything more important than love? You ever seen a human being that felt they weren't loved? I have. In mental hospitals. I have in kids that took their lives. Choice allows love, and love is important. So let's understand that what always happens is not always God's will. God does not cause the bad things that happen on earth. And right now we have this pandemic. But there's always something. God does not cause war. Why is there war? Not because God wills a war. You read the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, and you'll see Jesus did everything he could to dissuade people from engaging in war. And there are several of us who are veterans that can tell you what just seeing the horrors of war does to you intellectually, mentally. Number five, let's understand that not understanding local situations are not the same as general commands. In Acts, the second chapter, starting with verse 42, we read about the early church. The passage says, and they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship and breaking of bread and in prayers. And they continued daily in one accord in the temple. Oh, so we have to have a temple to worship, right? There are people who say that. There are religious leaders that have built gorgeous structures to enable worship. And yet, if you keep reading on to verse 46, you'll see it says, and they broke their bread from house to house and ate their meat with steadfastness and singleness of heart. And we read about Lydia and how the church was established in her house. That situation was a convenience. The temple was there and could be used for worship, not because it was a command of God. I think one of the greatest tragedies of modern denominational Christianity has been the obsession with buildings. How can we possibly justify spending millions and millions of dollars on a physical edifice when people are starving across the street? We're not properly dividing, rightly dividing the word of truth when that happens. And sometimes people cherry pick passages to justify something they want to legislate. And let me give you an example. 1 Corinthians 11, starting with verse 17. I do not praise you, Corinthians, because when you come together, it is not for the better, but for the worse. Isn't that interesting? Paul's saying, there are times when you guys come to worship and you leave worse off than when you came. I've had people say, well, I didn't get anything out of church this morning. Why not? Maybe you're for the worse. And here's what happened in Corinth. When you come together into one place, everyone takes his own supper. What? And one is hungry and another is drunk. Wow. What kind of a worship service is that? Well, it's not. When you come together to eat, wait for one another. If anyone's hungry, let him eat at home. I've heard people say, oh, well, that means you can't have a kitchen in the church. I always loved that statement. I was with Abe Miller one time, an old Amish preacher who had become a Christian and who he was the master of one-liners. And a guy came in and was upset because he said, tonight, people understand you people haven't had a kitchen in the church. And Abe looked at him and said, really? I wonder who baptized him. See, that's a misunderstanding, not rightly dividing the word of truth, not understanding the church is not a building. And many congregations are meeting today in a rented facility, in a VFW hall. One of my most pleasant memories is being in the bottom of the Grand Canyon on a sandbar and having a worship service in which we partake of the communion. We heard a good sermon. We had fellowship, but we're a long way from any building. The situation in Corinth was a disaster. They had confused fellowship with communion. And brothers and sisters, fellowship is important. Fellowship is important. You need to have an association with people of like mind. And we invite you to stay after services Wednesday night, especially. We have a gang of people to get together and enjoy fellowship. It's not a worship service, but it's fellowship. A couple of Tuesdays from now, we're going to have a fellowship gathering in my house. It's called the End of the Summer Picnic. Fellowship, not going to be a worship service. You're invited to come and enjoy hot dogs and what have you. But we need to understand that the situation in Corinth had turned into a disaster because people did not properly divide the word of truth. They had confused worship with fellowship. And we need to have fellowship. And we need to have worship. Partaking the communion is not a time to eat a bunch of food. It's a time to focus on the fact that the blood of Christ washes away our sins. Something that no people have ever known before. It's a time to focus on the sacrifice that Jesus made on the cross. That's a long way from having pizza on Friday night or Sunday night or whenever. Number six, cultural practices get confused with necessary conduct. Why don't we have a foot washing service? I've heard people quote John the 13th chapter, beginning with verse 3. This is Jesus talking, and he says, "For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you." He's washing the disciples' feet. And Peter doesn't understand. So he says, "Lord, wash my whole body, not just my feet." And Jesus says, "Peter, you don't understand." Washing your feet was a Jewish act of purification. Was something that was done because of the culture in which they lived. They walked barefoot from place to place. Sometimes 15 miles from one situation to another. Shoes were not part of the decor of those days, and people didn't wear socks. So can you imagine what the disciples' feet were like? Dirty, dried blood on them. Man, what a nasty job to wash their feet. And if you keep reading that passage in John 13, what Jesus is talking about is serving one another. I don't want to gross you out here, but when Cindy and I have been married a short period of time, I was in a lectureship in Texas. And Cindy had just had a surgery. And she got sick. And she was flowing at all ends. Throwing up, etc. Patty, sitting down here running Zoom, spent the whole night cleaning up. Vomit and poop and... What was that? That was foot washing. That was foot washing. Serving one another. That's what we're called to do. Jesus says, "I've done this to you, so you need to do it to each other." It was never a command as an act of worship. It was an act of servitude. Now, if you got dirty feet and you need them washed, I'll wash them for you. Try me. But not as an act of worship. And not as something I am required to do. Oh, we have had so much idiocy connected with all this. How long should a man's hair be? You remember that one? We had people got all upset because there were guys letting their hair grow out. How long should a man's hair be? And the interesting thing was that the discussion of this is in 1 Corinthians 11. And people rarely, and I won't impugn anybody's motive here, but people rarely read this whole passage. Verse 6, if a woman will not veil herself, she should cut off her hair. And cutting of her hair marks her, because cutting of her hair marks her as a shameless woman, the King James says. So let her put a veil over her face. Do you know why that verse is there? You know what the cultural aspect was of a woman cutting her hair? If a woman cut her hair, she was advertising that she was a prostitute. And so what Paul is saying in this passage is that if you got to cut your hair, ladies, wear a veil so you won't be identified as a hooker. Well, we didn't have that interpretation, did we? Somehow we twisted that around to say men should not have long hair. How long should a man's hair be? Well, first of all, be thankful you have hair. Right? Willard? Richard? But the important thing to understand is that this was a cultural statement. And it's a good thing, I guess, because most of our women at one time or another are wearing short hair. And this goes even a little more deeply, because there's another issue that has been part of our culture that we have not understood. And that is what I'll call secular purification rituals. There are things we do as citizens that are part of our culture that may or may not have religious significance. I've heard people say, well, you can't pledge allegiance to the flag of America. Why? Because your citizenship is in the kingdom of God. Really? Listen to Acts 21, starting with verse 23. These are the elders in the church talking to Paul, and they say, quote, we suggest that you do this. We have four men who have taken a vow. Join these men and undergo the rites of purification with them and pay their expenses at having their heads shaved so that everyone will realize that there is no truth to the things they have heard about you. But on the contrary, you put yourself in rule of your life in obedience to Jewish law. You understand what Paul had been told to do here? This was a religious act of the Jews, but it was part of civil law. To identify that you were not a Roman and that you were not in obedience to the commands of Caesar, there was a ritual you could go through. You shaved your head. You went through a purification ritual. And the elders of the church are telling Paul, we suggest you do this so that nobody will be distracted about what your teaching is, because you will have demonstrated your obedience to Jewish law and your defiance of those opposed to Christianity by what you do. So yes, even after I was a Christian, I saluted my superiors in the military. Yes, when school started back in the old days, I would start the first day of school and pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. That's the same thing Paul was doing. It is an extreme position and totally contradictory to Christianity to say that we can't have an allegiance to America. But most of you know that there are a number of denominations in our area that refuse to do that. Listen to 1 Corinthians 9, starting at verse 19. I am not bound to obey anyone just because he pays my salary. Paul says, yet I have freely and happily become a servant of many and all in hope of winning as many converts as possible. Now listen to what Paul says here. For the Jews, I have become like a Jew that I might win Jews for Christ. To those who have no law, I became like a man who has no law. Except, of course, that I must do what is right as a Christian. To the weak, I became as weak, that I might gain the weak. Yes, I have made all things to all men, that by every possible means I might win some to God. You know, one of the things that I rejoice at as being a Christian is the fact that I have freedom. I have freedom. There are very few limitations on me as a Christian. I don't have to worry about special days. I don't have to worry about my relationship to the law. Read Romans 13. Say, well, do you endorse so-and-so political figure? No. I don't know of any politician right now that I feel is consistent with what I see God to teach us. But I have become all things to all people. So I'm an American citizen. And I'll obey the teachings of the law, and I urge you to do the same. I think sometimes we have thought, and I wrote this in the bulletin this week, that we thought that being a peculiar person, you know, we're taught, the Bible talks about us being a peculiar people, that somehow that means we have to be wacko, we have to be an extremist, we have to be a militant. And I've seen people justify horrible things that oppose everything God teaches because they did not properly divide the word of truth. You know what's beautiful about Christianity? We don't have any cultural roots. When Richard goes to where his kids are in Crete, they do things differently than they do in America. But the fundamentals, belief in God, belief in Jesus, the importance of being repentant in life, the importance of baptism, the importance of being an instrument of righteousness, that's the same in all cultures. And the fact is that when the teachings of Christ and of the early church are ignored and denied, the result is violence. The result is war. The result is the enslavement of people. If you don't believe that, just pick up your newspaper. Romans 6 talks about this and says in verse 13, offer the parts of your body to him as instruments of righteousness. For sin shall not be your master. Oh man, folks, we got a lot of folks out there where sin is the master. I don't know whether you realize this or not, but you live in the capital of marijuana. I can't believe that you drive through Buchanan, Michigan, not exactly a metropolis, and you can see six shops now that are dealing with recreational pot. Niles is opening a new dispensary. We have seen the tragedy of recreational drugs. We are involved in a prison ministry, and almost half of the people we're working with are in prison because of marijuana and meth. Sin shall not be your master. But that's where we can be shining lights. Let your light so shine before men. We can live free, but we can also live in the world that surrounds us. I hope somehow you can appreciate the beauty of this passage in 2 Timothy verse 15. Study to show yourself approved to God, workmen that need not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. When you rightly divide the word of truth, you have freedom. You have power. You have the strength to live differently than the world around you. People think we're crazy running the food bank. Those of us that have cleaned the highway, all of us have had experiences of people ridiculing us for doing that. Sometimes even to the point of throwing stuff at us. We've all had experiences where we are ridiculed because we spend so much money serving others. Study to show yourself to prove to God. We have the freedom to do those things, and the world may ridicule, the word may criticize. But what a blessing. What an incredible blessing to be a Christian, especially in this day in which we live. As I talked to Linda Curry less than 24 hours after she lost her husband, she was coherent. She was actually joyous. All his life, James had talked about being free of the pain and the suffering of life. And now, as I held his hand as he drew his last breath, his parting words with, "I am going home. Take care of yourself, Linda. I love you." And he quit breathing. That's Christianity in the real world. I hope this lesson and the lesson last week have been helpful to you. I hope it's that you gain some understanding of why we do what we do and why we don't do what some of our religious friends and neighbors might do. Our freedom is so different than the teachings of men. And one of those freedoms is to renew our relationship to God anytime we feel a need, or to become a Christian whenever our hearts are in line with God's will. And if you're subject in any way to that invitation, we invite you to come to the front and express it as together we stand and sing, "Won't you respond to the invitation of the Lord?"